And we'll go on to case number 3, which is Michael Willett versus National Capital Management. Good morning, Mr. McGowan.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Matthew McGowan for National Capital Management, or NCM as I refer to it. This is a bankruptcy appeal. The bankruptcy debtors, the Willetts, during the course of their Chapter 13 bankruptcy case, and in fact about 2 years into that Chapter 13 bankruptcy case, at their behest, received, accepted, and eventually recorded in their favor a quitclaim deed for a full, unrestricted, fee simple interest in property in Evansville, Indiana.
Mr. McGowan, was National paid the full value of the secured part of its claim?
No, it was not, Judge.
Oh, so that's wrong in... Oh, okay.
It was not paid the full value of its claim. In the bankruptcy case, there was, for example, at one point $1,700 paid, supposedly for attorney's fees. There was no rhyme or reason as to why $1,700 was paid. There was no legally justifiable basis behind paying $1,700. So there were payments made to NCM, but NCM has not been paid in full. During the pendency of the Willetts Chapter 13 case, they, again, at their behest, acquired for themselves a full fee simple interest in the Elmhurst Drive property.
Where in the record would we find evidence of the post-petition value of the property?
Where you would find that, Judge, is in the reference that the district court made to that fact, and they made that reference because it was never contested that it was $95,000. And, in fact,
Is that, what, $30,000 more than the... And the remainder interest there?
Yeah, yes, Judge, it is. It is.
So are you saying that the district court didn't make a finding or simply assumed the $95,000 figure for the sake of argument? What?
It correctly assumed that $95,000 was that value, and the reason it assumed that was because it was never contested. In fact, if you look at page 4 of the opinion there, which is tab O in the appendix, you'll see that the district court says, quote, debtors acquired a full fee simple interest in the Elmhurst Drive property valued at $95,000, and then goes on to assume the never contested assumption that it was valued at $95,000. So everybody assumed it was $95,000.
Well, presumably a remainder interest is contingent on whoever has the higher interest, which I assume was the mother-in-law or whatever, and whoever owned it.
Yes, Judge.
That probably was the possibility of a life estate. She may have relinquished it, but it would be diminished. The remainder would be diminished as long as she's living. So I assume that's where you'd have a difference between the remainder interest and then the full interest.
Exactly right, Judge. She had a life estate in the property, and these debtors had a remainder interest, and then the debtors wanted to effect a purchase or a financing of some sort with respect to that property, and the only way they could do that was by acquiring a full fee simple interest in the property. That's why they wanted to do that. And as part of that, they were getting money freed up for themselves. So that's why they wanted to go ahead and do that.
Now, they did that before the final hearing on whatever the, what is it called, the homestead exemption, the hearing that they put off. What is that called? I should have written.
Well, they did that before they filed their motion to avoid the NCM judicial lien.
So it's the avoidance hearing?
Yes, Judge.
Okay, and so had the avoidance hearing and done everything before that fee simple, then it would only have been the $65,000 issue. And they could have closed the estate, the bankruptcy estate, at some point. Had
sure.
She not given that quitclaim deed?
Yeah, I mean, sure. If we have different facts, you have different results all the time.
The different fact would be there would be no after-acquired property.
There would be, arguably, there would be no after-acquired property. But if you look at their motion to avoid, Judge, what you find is that they're being a little bit more than disingenuous in the way in which they present this to the bankruptcy court, and they're effectively trying to mask what actually transpired here. Because their motion to avoid which is Appendix Tab H, says, quote, debtors are purchasing and claim as exempt property, close quote, the Elmhurst Drive property. And they filed that on January 5th of 2006. The fact is, a month before, they had already, quote, unquote, purchased or had already obtained a full fee simple interest in that property. So they're telling the court. They're not telling the bankruptcy court what actually transpired.
As I understand, the court looked at the statutes and thought that they were ambiguous and went to legislative history and said, well, it's the fresh start issue that would prevail as opposed to what appears to be the specific language in these statutes.
Right. Unfortunately, with all due respect, the district court was wrong. On that point, they were wrong on a number of points. And our case is basically established by a fairly simple syllogism, which I would like to go through very quickly with the court. The syllogism starts with, under Section 1306A1, property of the bankruptcy estate includes all property that the debtor acquires after the commencement of the case. There's no question about that. The debtors acquired a full fee simple interest in that Elmhurst Drive property after the filing of the Chapter 13 case, and in fact 2 years into it. The fee simple interest thus became property of the Chapter 13 bankruptcy estate.
Now, somewhere in the brief I saw, or somewhere quoted, and it's also before the estate closes.
Yes.
It's got to be while the estate is open.
Yes.
It can't be something later on that appreciation or something else.
Sure.
It's over.
Which makes sense.
Now, they seem to be trying to say this is moot and it's over anyway.
They're just incorrect on that point. And there's a number of points. With all due respect, there's got to be some integrity to the appellate process. They can't be raising three and four issues for the first time on appeal. For example, they've raised this issue about the automatic stay. It would have been interesting to hear what the bankruptcy court said, what the district court said, or what they had to say about this automatic stay issue, which I'd be happy to address on rebuttal. But the reason the bankruptcy court said nothing about that, the reason the district court said nothing about it, is because they never raised it. But in their brief for the first time with this court, they refer to this case, United States versus Gold, which is distinguishable on a number of points here. But they raised that for the first time on appeal. And they've raised a number of other points on appeal for the first time, which just should not be permitted.
Let me just ask you this. Would your argument be the same if the Willetts owned the property in joint tenancy with Wanda Garrison, and Garrison quit claimed her interest in the house to the Willetts on December 14, 2005?
That would still be an after-acquired property, Judge.
Yeah.
One of the errors of the district court is the district court focuses in on the property as if they're focusing in on the address there on Elmhurst Drive, as if they're focusing in on the bricks and mortar on Elmhurst Drive. That's not what the bankruptcy code provides. The bankruptcy code throughout in Section 541, which is the overarching provision that deals with property of the estate, in Section 1306, and in Section 522F, which is right at the core of what we're talking about here, talks about interest of the debtor in property. So under the district court's view, because the Willetts had some interest in property on the petition date, even though it was just a remainder interest, because they had that, that means that somehow the court is precluded from considering the fact that they acquired this heightened interest before the time that they filed the motion to avoid the NCM judicial lien. Well, the law is replete with examples where courts look at and decipher the differences between property interests. And certainly there's a big difference, as Your Honor pointed out, between a remainder interest and a full, unrestricted, fee simple interest in property.
If they had the original interest and then, for whatever reason, the property value appreciated substantially while the estate was open, would that have changed it?
No, because that would not have been an after-acquired property situation, Judge. What we have here is an after-acquired property situation, and where you're avoiding or attempting to avoid a judicial lien in after-acquired property, you look at the definition of value in 522A2. It's got its own freestanding definitional section of value, and it says, with respect to property acquired after the filing of the petition, you look at what the value was of that property at the time it was acquired. Clearly, Congress is saying, when you acquire property after the petition and you're trying to avoid a judicial lien on that, you look at what the value was of that property after the petition date, that is, at the time it was later acquired. That's the error of the district court. I'd like to reserve, if I could, at least...
Let me ask you this one question. I'm trying to understand this. It's a $30,000 increase in the value, as you see it, between the date of the filing of the petition and the quitclaim deed that got rid of the life estate. And that becomes important because the Indiana homestead exemption is so low. Is that right?
I don't know if it's low or not in relation to other states, but
well, it is low. It's $7,500.
Yeah, it becomes
Minnesota's $200,000.
Yeah, yeah. There are other states that are lower, but the importance of that, Judge, is that under 522F, based on an amendment that took place about 10 years or so ago, there's a strict arithmetic formula, and that $30,000 differential is determinative on how you apply that formula. If it is, as it should be, that you value what they owned at the time the motion to avoid the judicial lien was filed, which is a full fee simple interest valued at $95,000, they can't avoid our judicial lien. Can't. Anyway, I'd like to reserve a minute of rebuttal if I could.
It doesn't make any difference to the outcome of this case. But if the homestead exemption in Minnesota was, say, or in Indiana was $40,000, then you'd be out here. Right.
I'd have to go back, and we'd have to go back and look at how the math computes under that arithmetic formula, Judge. But what this court is being asked to do is make a legal determination that you look at the full fee simple interest because that's what was acquired and was held by the debtors at the time they filed their motion to avoid. And that's what 1306A2 says, 522A2, and these other provisions say you look at what the value was of that after-acquired property.
I understand.
Thank you.
Okay, so now what we'll do is, because we asked so many questions of you, is we'll add 2 minutes so that you get 2 minutes rebuttal.
Thank you, Judge.
And we'll add 2 minutes to your argument, Mr. Botkin, as well.
I don't think I'll need it, but if I do, I'll take it.
Okay.
My name is Tom Botkin. I'm counsel for the Chapter 13 trustee. I do not represent the Willetts. I represent the trustee. Trustee is a party here because he is the trustee of the estate. Excuse me. The trustee's interest in this matter is to resolve, for purposes of going forward in the vast number of Chapter 13 cases that we now have in all bankruptcy courts, exactly when we're going to value property for purposes of avoidance of a judicial lien. I would like to note for you that I have searched the record, and I cannot find any evidence from a witness establishing $95,000.
But the court referred to it as that value.
I admit to Judge Young, who said it in his opinion.
That's all we have, and I didn't see anybody opposing it.
I agree, Your Honor. It's in his opinion.
Who bore the burden of establishing the value of the property?
I think the debtor bore that burden, ma'am, and they did. If you look at the plan, the approval of the plan, the bankruptcy court established the value of the property on the date of the filing at $65,000. And did not state that it was just a remainder interest, established the value of the property at that address at $65,000. That's in the record. That's we cited that in our brief. I think that from my perspective for the trustee, the core of the case for us is really contained in Judge Young's opinion when he talked about why he elected to look at and establish the date he picked, that is the date of the filing of the petition, to establish value. And I think, as you noted, Judge, he looked specifically at history, at the congressional issues with regard to
history, right.
Sure. And he noted on page 9 of his opinion, he also cited the Van Zandt case, which was a District of Illinois bankruptcy case, that, and he quoted it, a judicial lien, which is what these folks had, will survive only if at the time of the bankruptcy filing, the debtor's property had sufficient value to satisfy all liens of the property, including a judicial lien, and at the same time giving effect to the debtor's exemption of the property. At the time of the filing of this bankruptcy, that value was $65,000. That was established in the plea, in the filings, and found by the bankruptcy judge, and by Judge Young. I think he even had that note in his opinion. And I think, as you noted, Judge, that That impaired the collateral because Indiana's exemption is so low. By the way, it's not relevant directly, but Indiana's raised its exemption level some, not a lot. But if we would have the new exemption level, we wouldn't be here today either, I don't think. It's not 200 grand yet. Anyway.
Well, Minnesota's not even the most generous state.
Yeah,
for some states.
Right. Or next, maybe next to Florida, where you...
Well, I think Massachusetts has like $300,000.
Florida doesn't have any.
In Florida, you get to keep everything, right?
Yeah.
Judge Young also
only 40.
That's why O.J. Simpson's house is in Florida.
Along with some other people we probably all know, Judge. And as Judge Young noted, that the vast approach in this country with regard to valuation of the value of the property on is the date of the filing, not the time the motion to avoid the lien is filed.
Well, what does the statute mean? Because in the two places that they pointed out, value means fair market value, the date of the filing of the petition, or with respect to property that becomes property of the estate after such date, as of the date such property becomes property of the estate. It's for whatever reason, and I don't understand this, why they went through with this fee simple transaction while the estate's still open, and before the motion to avoid, because that just invited this response that now they've got more of an asset than they had going in, and the thing's still open and it's after acquired property. And I think that, as they cite, any interest in the property that the estate acquires after the commencement of the case is part of what is included.
Yeah, I can't answer why they did what they did timing-wise. I don't know that. I mean, I wasn't there, and I'm not their counsel. Had they done it earlier, I suspect we wouldn't be here today. I think that's probably
later,
true.
Maybe.
Right. I would submit to the court, though, that while Judge Young used the phrase after acquired property, and he called it new property, I'm not sure as a matter of property law that's necessarily true. A life estate, which is what was held by this lady's mother here, is an impediment to the fee title. These folks had the remainder. They got the remainder when the life estate terminated. Life estate's going to terminate one of two ways. She either quit claim deeds it, which she did, or she dies, in which case they then automatically own the fee unencumbered the life estate. I suggest that really maybe a better analogy here to deal with this question of enhanced value, which I understand counsel doesn't agree it's an enhanced value case, but I submit it may well be from the trustee standpoint. This is more like perhaps a piece of land that's got a zoning impediment, or better yet, some restrictive covenants that reduce its value. I may own the land, but I don't own it completely free of all impediments, or a big easement, perhaps. And if those impediments disappear, the land may become more valuable because they disappear. But I still own the land to start with. And in fact, what happened was the land became more valuable when the impediment disappeared, but it was still worth what it was worth on the day of filing the petition.
If you have a mortgage on the property of, let's say, half the value, if the mortgage is paid down over a period of time, that expands the value
Correct.
Of the interest in the landholder. And it seems to me you have a similar situation when that impediment is taken off voluntarily, and they did it while this bankruptcy estate is open.
Sure. And, in fact, this property was mortgaged. I think the confirmation
right.
order shows that.
That's where the $57,000 or something.
That's correct. That's right. Yeah. By the way, it's my understanding of the record that the purpose for the quitclaim deed was to allow refinancing so these people could buy out their Chapter 13 plan. That's the reason it was done, I think.
And got more money.
Oh, yeah, they did.
Yeah,
I agree.
That,
no question.
Which is the whole
no question
here.
Sure. One final point from the trustee's standpoint. If, in fact, this was new property, that is property different than the property already owned by these people, we submit that the judicial lien would not attach to it anyway. Now, counsel argues that we've waived the right to debate the issue or argue the issue of the automatic stay. The automatic stay provision of Section 362 simply says that judicial liens do not attach to after prior, they're stopped on the date of the filing of the bankruptcy. The automatic stay exists. So even if this were new property, the trustee's position is their lien would not attach to it in any case. Becomes property then of the estate, which the trustee has a duty to administer.
So you're saying a judicial lien would not attach, notwithstanding the bankruptcy?
To new property. Because of the bankruptcy.
So that freezes it?
Yes,
that
absolutely.
That freezes the asset as it was when the filing, notwithstanding the fact that afterward they became as they did, apparently, what their intent was to have the full value of the property that Quick Lane B so they could get more money to pay down in Chapter 13.
13
which is
plan.
The whole reason why they wanted to, before they had this motion to avoid, they wanted the full value of the property.
Again, from the trustee's standpoint, our purpose here is guidance so that we know what to do going forward in lots of other kinds of cases.
I hope that's the reason.
And that's why I'm here. If you have questions, I'll be glad to try to answer them.
You argued that the court erred in granting $1,700 in...
I think Mr. McGowan and I both agree we don't understand why the judge did that and have no idea what basis he had for it.
Anyone raise that argument below?
It actually was raised initially in the appeal from the bankruptcy judge to the district judge, as I read the record, but Judge Young's opinion indicates the parties in a teleconference limited the appeal to one issue and one issue only, and that was the valuation date issue.
So then...
We, I think, raised it, or the Willits raised it in the brief here, I believe.
Now, if this goes back to what you, Judge Young?
Yes, sir.
And then for the one issue, and then I guess other issues?
If it's reopened, one could always raise those issues again and again.
Where would the money go if that award was reversed? Would the other unsecured creditors divide it up?
I believe that's correct, Your Honor. I think the money would go back to the trustee for distribution to unsecured creditors, of which this petitioner is one.
Did any of them object to the award?
I don't think anybody did because I'm not sure anybody... there's some debate about what kind of notice was required for the hearing that was held, but I can't answer that, Judge.
Isn't that whole $1,700 an argument without a remedy? Because I don't see any appealing here. Or maybe I'm missing it. I don't know. I certainly didn't see a cross appeal.
No. And I think, again, Judge, it was simply... As you've asked, I mean, it's there. I think we both cannot explain to you how the bankruptcy judge did it. And if you read Judge Young's opinion, he notes in a footnote that the only issue he was dealing with on the appeal was the valuation date issue.
So if we affirm, the money comes out of escrow and goes to whoever.
I think they get to keep the money.
If we reverse, it goes back to Judge Young on the valuation issue, and then those other issues, I assume, would be
raised at that point. Yes, sir.
It's a bit of a mess, isn't it?
Yes, ma'am. But then, that's why we have lawyers.
Yeah. That's why we have courts, did you say?
Indeed. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Boy, the fees in this case must... be phenomenal at this point.
You don't know my client, Judge. No. it's an important issue to us, and frankly, we don't think that we've gotten the consideration that this fairly significant legal issue deserves. Let me address a couple of points first. When someone talks about what the majority rule is, that you value property on the petition date, there isn't a single one of those cases, and I saw that in a string citation that the district court had issued in its opinion. Not one of those cases is an after-acquired property case. Not one of them implicates, as this case does, Section 1306A2. So it's not a majority rule on these facts at all. Second, the value of $65,000 as somehow being res judicata, that was the value on the petition date. And how can that be res judicata when what we're looking at is not the interest that was valued on the petition date, which was a remainder interest, but instead we're looking at the full fee simple interest that was acquired about 2 years after the petition date? There was never an issue raised below about automatic stay, but there is in the brief. It's raised through this case, United States versus Gold, a Fourth Circuit opinion, 1999. Again, that was never raised. The import of raising the United States versus Gold case is apparently that they think that when you bring property into the bankruptcy estate through these after-acquired property provisions, that somehow it comes into the estate being stripped by virtue of the automatic stay of the liens and encumbrances that are on it. And I would refer the court to the dissenting opinion of Judge Hamilton in United States versus Gold, where the court says at 178 F3rd at page 725, essentially, the automatic stay is irrelevant. It says Section 362A5 essentially prevents a creditor from encumbering a debtor's property post-petition. In contrast, the clawback provision, which he's talking about, these after-acquired provisions, instruct courts to treat property acquired in that case within 180 days of the petition date as if the debtor owned the property pre-petition. In this case, that means recognizing the property, the inheritance, as entering the bankruptcy estate encumbered by the IRS tax lien. In other words, what he's saying is that when you have property coming into the bankruptcy estate through these after-acquired property provisions, that property doesn't come in stripped of whatever liens and encumbrances on it are on it. It comes in just as if it came in as pre-petition property. And, in fact, the fact that they filed their motion to avoid the judicial lien belies their automatic stay arguments, because if the automatic stay somehow stripped this after-acquired full fee simple interest of the NCM judicial lien, why do they need then to file their motion to avoid? The fact that they filed their motion to avoid demonstrates that they recognized that the automatic stay did not have that effect. Thank you very much.
Thanks to Mr. McGowan. Thanks to Mr. Botkin. The case will be taken under advisement, and the court is going to take a short 5-minute recess.